All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Tuesday, September 17th of 2024, and looking ahead, we have a big 10-game MLB main slate later this evening, so it should be a fun day of DFS. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew. I'm one of the coaches over here at Saber Sim. This is a show where we go over how to use the Saber Sim app, answer any and all DFS-related questions. Get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You'll also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim teams. Can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern. We do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So tune in and get your questions answered. But with that said, let's get SaberSim pulled up here. Have plenty of questions to go over today. A lot of questions came in. So we're going to jump right in and start tackling these. All right, first question. When clicking on a player and viewing their frequency slash fantasy point averages, what additional information should I consider when evaluating the players they are listed to correlate with? Is there any factor that could influence a judgment call beyond what the simulations already account for? Interesting question, right? Like, let's say, you know, I click on Cole Reagans here, and this is the view that the user is referring to when it's like, hey, you know, when I select a player and I'm looking at them, you know, basically trying to do additional research, trying to figure out, you know, who could potentially be a good play, who could potentially be a bad play, and how to, you know, find some additional value there. The range of outcomes is going to be super important. And I'm not 100% sure why I'm having trouble loading right now, but let's see if somebody else will. It's less about the correlation shown, but for me, it's the shape of the graph, right? You see Wheeler has this big, nice shape, bell curvy. And then you look at a batter, highest projected batter, Corbin Carroll, right? And then, you know, we click on one of these batters, hoping one of them will load. Try another hard refresh. Batters. Okay, so now Carroll loads, right? And this graph looks way different than what we were seeing with Reagans, right? It's a right skewed data set is what it would be called. And this tells me a lot about the players. And then this also gets reflected in the players' adjusted ownership, right? I think the summary that you can come to is this adjusted ownership column, where what adjusted ownership is doing is it is looking at the player's expected ownership in the contest. It is looking at their range of outcomes, and it's basically giving them like a riskiness score. And when adjusted ownership is higher than contest ownership, that means that SaberSim thinks this play isn't a great play. But when adjusted ownership is neutral to the player's expected ownership, then SaberSim thinks this is a much better play. So the reason that Cole Reagans and pitchers in general have closer adjusted ownerships to actual ownerships is because their range of outcomes is closer to being a bell-shaped curve, where their most likely outcome is often their actual projection. But the hitters are completely opposite. So when a hitter has high ownership, the builder goes, ah, this guy's like pretty risky to start with, you know, to play him at a very high ownership is actually like really risky and you should tread with caution is basically what it's telling you. But then you go and see somebody with lower ownership, right? Somebody like Bobby Witt Jr. And his ownership ends up being a lot closer to his adjusted ownership, right? So when these players are lower owned, they can be better plays because of how often they get there. But when they're really high owned, then the builder is like, I don't think you should really do this. This is pretty sketchy, right? So that's the biggest thing as far as what you can learn, in my opinion, from looking inside the graphs. As far as like correlations and stuff go, I really let the builder take care of that. And then if you're playing a sport like MLB, you know, correlation is going to be very, very high. So those correlations get amplified and you should feel comfortable knowing that they're already being taken into account. All right. Good stuff there. Next question. Just to clarify, if you won't know the exact exposures of players on multi-fill, autofill, until after you fill your contest because it removes used lineups and then reorganizes each contest sim, correct? Yeah, so basically talking about what happens here, right? So if we go back to yesterday's NFL slate. So this isn't going to work perfect because I already have lineups in these. But basically, before what we were doing is we were showing you exposures, but they weren't reflective of what was actually going to happen when you clicked save because the order of operations was different. So what we were doing was we were showing you the exposures if all 108 lineups were grouped together, which is the way you would do it in direct fill. So it was giving you like a false sense of what your exposures were going to be. So now what we do is we effectively leave entry exposure blank until you hit save. And then once you hit save, we cycle through all the contests, putting the lineups into the entries. And then we say, hey, now your entries are, your exposures are X, Y, and Z in your entries. So that's what's happening there. You got to hit save first. And then it fills. You should see like two dashes or something basically telling you it's blank and there's no data. All right. When building lineups for a smaller contest, less than 5,000, is it advisable to use the number of lineups in that contest instead? So far as building lineups go, you know, in like 100-person GPP, always build the maximum because we're just sampling the sims and we're just building you lineups, right? We're not building them in order of strength. The lineups get built first and then they get graded later or they get put through the contest sim later. So as far as building lineups go, we are randomly sampling the sims, pulling sim outputs, putting the best lineups together based on those sims, doing that as many times as you have in the lineups box, and then we're moving on to the next lineup until we're full, and then the lineups get graded afterwards. So in theory, your best lineup could be built last, which is why you should always build the maximum that you can possibly build. All right, next question. If I'm playing multiple 20 max contests and using autofill to fill my entries, how do I play a few of the same higher ROI lineups that I like in the other contest since it doesn't dupe lineups across entries? Good question. So what you need to do is you need to lock those lineups. So we did a demo recently on one of our other office hour streams, probably earlier in the week, where I had five entries, a three max, a single entry, and a single entry. And then I locked the lineup and then I filled the contest, and that locked lineup got used in all three entries. So if you lock the lineup, that lineup will always be prioritized. It will not be removed from the pool, and it will go into multiple entries as you have them. So as long as you come in here, click this lock icon, that lineup will always be prioritized. All right, good question. Next question from Discord. Going to hit all the Discord questions first and then jump over to live YouTube chat. Is it better to do 20 entries into one multi-entry contest or 20 entries into 20 single-entry contests? This is a good question. So I saw a little bit of discussion in Discord about this too. So our contest selection recommendations are to play 25 to 50% of your bankroll allocation into single entries and three maxes, play the other 50 to 75% in 20 maxes and 150 maxes. Now, based on our back testing, this helps to smooth out variance the most and leads to users needing a smaller bankroll to weather the swings of DFS. Now, if you had, you know, say $20, right, and you're going to play deciding between $1.20 max or $21 single entries, what I would do is I would follow the recommendations and put five entries into the single entry or up to 10 if you want, and then put the other $10 to $15 into the $1.20 max. Now, a misconception in DFS is that if you're going to play a contest, you need to max it out. That is untrue. And the reason for that is because in theory, what you should do is you should put your best lineup first, your second best lineup second, your third best lineup fourth. So every lineup after your first should be a little worse than the first lineup. So all you're doing is saying, hey, I'm only going to put my 10 best lineups into the contest, and I'm not going to put my 11 through 20th best lineups into the contest. That is okay to do. So don't think that you have to max out the contest if you decide to play it. You can enter less than the maximum. That is totally cool. All right, next question. How do you all interpret the results when simming your build against itself in MLB? In one of the Saberson videos, Jordan and team called out fragile teams that may be exposed when you look at team stack changes after simming the build against itself. I'm struggling to figure out what it means when, as an example, two teams have high exposure when sorting lineups by traditional sim ROI, but those two teams drop to 0% exposure when the build is simmed against itself. Does that mean those two teams may be overowned in an actual slate, so we may want to fade them a bit? For example, in tonight's main slate, the Yankees and Phillies have 21 and 16% exposure in my lineups when sorted by sim ROI. But if I sort by ROI, when the build is simmed against itself, exposures drop to 0.5% and 1.6% respectively, trying to figure out what that means. Good question here, right? So let's talk about this a little bit. So the idea behind the self-simming is that you are trying to account for when teams' ownership is going to vary from what our field lineups are saying. So what both of these mean, so let's talk about these. So the 21 and 16% exposure against the field lineups that you described, that is saying, hey, we think the Yankees are a good play when the Yankees are played at this ownership, okay? So they're like sub 2% owned in our field lineup set. Now, what the self-sim does is it sims all these lineups against themselves, right? So if I come in and look at pool exposure, we don't have 2% Yankee stacks. We actually have 6% Yankee stacks in our build. So the idea of self-simming is to account for ownership variance, where you're basically saying, okay, what if we run a sim and the Yankees are actually 6% owned and not 2% owned? And then what SaberSim is telling you is like, if the Yankees are actually going to be 6% owned, they're actually not as good of a play anymore. So that leads to the conclusion that the Yankees ROI in that field lineup set is actually pretty fragile, and you should be careful because you could think that you're positive ROI pre-slate, but if the Yankees come in, you know, a couple percent points higher stack ownership wise, that could have a drastic effect on the viability of those lineups. So that is what the self-sim is doing, because when you run a build, we don't have parameters on how often a team can come up. It's how often they're coming up in the sim. So the fact that, you know, you don't have that, the Yankees could come in at 6%, you know, 5, 4, higher, doesn't even matter, right? But you're getting that feedback of this pool of lineups has more Yankees. How do they grade out now? Oh, they now grade out bad. So that's what it means. All right, next question. An NFL showdown seems like when you try to limit dupes in large field contests, it tanks your 99th percent profit. In the $3.20 max, I had a top 10 sim win rate and was positive sim ROI, but my 99th percent profit was horrendous. Any insight as to why this is? I don't know, but this would probably... So I'm a little nervous about the results of this contest because I know we've been having issues with some of these like 100K plus entry contests and the sim ROI results. So I'd probably have to look at it. So what I can probably do is take a look at this either on the build review show or afterwards. I kind of don't want to be troubleshooting it live on stream. So what I'll do here is if you could drop your DK username, and I'll just ask for it in Discord in like a thread where you ask this question, I can look into it a little bit more. So DK username. And I will follow up with you after stream and we can dig a little bit deeper there. All right, next question. Can you show me how to create a rule that doesn't allow a player to be played with another player, example, two running backs on the same team? And this one came in YouTube chat as well. So it looks like they asked it twice. So no problem. So let's go to Monday through Thursday. I don't know if we have full like Thursday on Sims yet for NFL. So let's just go to a new build. So what I would do here is say I don't want to play two running backs from the same team. So I go to rules, add new rule, group automatic, use no more than one running back, for instance, and then you group by team. Now this will basically go in for every single team. It will create a group rule that says that will include the running backs from the team. So for instance, it will go and create one for the Jets that says, hey, use no more than one of Hall, Allen, and Dave and Davis, right? And it puts those three together, puts them in a group, and then it does the same for the Patriots, same for the Eagles, same for the Falcons. So that rule that we just had up on the screen here is exactly how you would do it. And you can just pause it, take a snapshot, recreate it for yourself. All right, good stuff. Jumping over to the live YouTube chat. Mark said, I've been adjusting my min-max exposures in the direct fill and then switching over to autofill to save my lineups. Is this correct? I don't think it's a problem. The autofill will honor your min-max exposures. So it is okay to set them. And then once they are set, then if you fill an autofill, they will be taken into account. So yes, you can do this. I don't think you have to do it in direct fill, but just because autofill will just show the list of the players, but you still have access to the player table. So it shouldn't make a big difference there, but the order of operations is good, and I am positive that it will work as you are intending it to work. All right, Roche, can we go over a late swap build? When I did late swap last time using the new SS, autofill is no longer there, and it says late swap. I was wondering if the process remains the same. Sure, you know, we could late swap this build here. So 108 entries, I'm going to go to late swap. You can click the double arrows, or you can click the late swap button. It does not matter. So then let's say I'm just going to use defaults for my swap. All right. So this will default to 10 swaps per lineup. I think it's fine. If this was like a Thursday to Monday slate and I was doing this on Friday following the Thursday game, I'd probably max that out to the most possible. But when there is one game left on the slate, there's only going to be so many swap options. per lineup. So I think leaving it at 10 is fine. So now let's say that, you know, I'm ready. I really don't want to change anything else. I'm happy with it. I would just click build swaps. So let's let this swap. All right. So I would first run the late swap, and then I would run the contest sim. Just waiting for the contest sim to finish. So this is kind of cool, right? I can see the entry exposure, which are basically my pre-slate, my pre-swap exposures. And then I can see all the new exposures, which I can see the biggest changes, right? So like, for instance, we're playing a lot more Aaron Rodgers than we were previously. We're playing a ton more KJ Osborne than we were previously, if I were to sort by this sortie metric. But now what I can do is go to my autofill. What I would do is go to the top up here, because when you change the sorting metric here, it changes it for all of them. So click this contest sim, target contest ROI. It'll adjust all of these automatically. So the method is going to be late swap, because it's not going to allow you to change between rank or unique rank, because each swap is tied to a lineup. So this is not changeable, and that is okay. So then now what I would do is just click save. I would wait for this to process, get the notification. Now I can go and download. I can sort by exposures to see the changes, and I'm basically all set. So that is effectively how I would run my swap, and then download and I'd be good to go. Roche said, I normally just save my settings and load it into the new build. It's totally okay to clone. You know, if you come into late swap and you use the clone option to carry over all your settings, that is totally fine. A couple things. Does the contest tree carry over to the late swap? Do I need to move contest to the top that I want the lineups in? So late swap is going to work a little bit differently. So it's not going to be like the, well, I don't want to necessarily say that. So for instance, right, if I go to direct fill, I can go down to this original lineup, and you should be able to hover here like this, or maybe I clicked it. Okay, so I'm hovering over the original part, and then it's showing me the original lineup. So these are tied to your entries, right? So it's not cycling the same way it was. It is identifying what the original lineup was, rebuilding that, giving you the best version based on the contest sim in question here. So there is a chance that one version of a lineup could be the best version for multiple, like if you have the same five players and two entries. So for that reason specifically, I would order these the way that you want. Maybe you want to do it by prize pool, whatever it is, where it's like, hey, if I have the same five players in one of my $1 20 maxes as the same five players as one of my $1 dime, my 10 cent dime times, you know, one, I don't know if the ROIs are the same, but let's say that they're both the highest ROI. You would want to order them that way. The best version of the lineup goes into the top, and then the second best version goes into the dime time. So that could be something there where I could see the need to order them as you care about the contest. But that should carry over as well. It, you know, I just come in here and sort by prize pool. That works for me generally. So I would make sure your contests are ordered the way you want. I think that's a good point. And then just to stay on this topic before moving to another question. Okay, so is it still has all the contest sim data from before when it's late swaps? I guess since it's a late swap, you should assume the lineups are half locked, so ordering doesn't matter that much. I don't think it matters as much, but I think it could, you know, based on like the example that we just did with like two lineups with the same five players locked. So just order them in the same manner that in whatever way they matter to you, I'd say is always a good thing to do. All right. Next question. Do I need to change my sim settings to live before swapping? Change 20 max to 20 max live. Also, what does that change do? Good question. So no, you don't have to do this. We do this automatically for you. So if you go to the contest tab, you go to field lineups, click this gear icon, use live fields, use live sims are going to be toggled on automatically where we are automatically using the live sim data. Now, what is the live sim data, right? So as the games play out, we are using the actual scores that the players scored in the contest sims and updating your lineups accordingly. So for instance, we go back to a build. Now you're going to see a couple things, right? So let's use Darnell Mooney as a good example, right? Because he had a really good game. So Mooney projected 7.92 points. Well, he actually scored 17.8. So he, you know, more than doubled his projection, right? If we weren't using live data and you were using contest sims to build out the rest of your lineup, you wouldn't know that Mooney actually scored much higher and lineups with him are probably going to do much better. But what we're doing is we're using the actual scores that the players have in their games and then reusing that information to reassign ROIs, win rates, cash rates to all of the lineups. So we know, hey, you know, Mooney actually scored this many points. Let's assign this many points to him in the contest sim when we run it. And then also from the live fields, we're not even using projected ownership anymore. We know that he was played at 19.69% of lineups. So the way I like to think about the live ownership is, you know, ownership is a puzzle. As the games unlock, as ownership becomes available, we are getting pieces of the puzzle and we are putting them together. And we're saying there is this much ownership left available on the slate. These players came in higher owned. These players came in lower owned. Let's build out the rest of the ownership for the slate based on the pieces of the picture that we already have. So ownership becomes more and more accurate the more and more people that we start to see their actual projections for. So the last set of ownership projections are going to be more accurate, in my opinion, right? Because we have so many pieces of the puzzle at that point. So we're using actual lineups, we're using actual scores, and we're rebuilding your lineups and running them through the contest sim and figuring out which ones have the best chance of winning, cashing, etc. All right, good stuff so far. Looks like we are caught up in the YouTube chat, so jumping back over to the Discord. Excuse me. And got one more here from AK. Let's get this one in the queue. Another reminder, we have our build review show going live in about 30 minutes here. Have plenty of people signed up today, but if anybody wants to sign up for a future show, either tomorrow, later in the week, all you got to do is drop your DK username in the Office Hours channel in our Discord, and I can add you to the queue for tomorrow's show. But let's hit this next question from AK. Question is, do you use the favorite feature at all? Are there any rules of thumb for it, or is it just a simple way to staple a lineup you want to take a shot on? Good question here. One second. All right. So the favorites, in my opinion, is a really good way. I'd say, like, for instance, on Showdown, maybe you want to build out lineups for different ways that the game could play out. Maybe you want to do like a run heavy game script. Maybe you want to do a pass heavy game script. Maybe you want to do, you know, five lineups with like the captain quarterback paired with a wide receiver. Maybe you want to do five lineups, captain quarterback with no number one wide receiver. It's a way of doing different builds and combining all these lineups together. So I think it could be really useful I don't use it a ton. You know, I know you asked specifically if I use it at all. I don't, but I think it can be a really good thing when used the right way, especially when people want to do different lineups with different styles and then combine them all into a single 150 max, 20 max, et cetera here. So good question. I think it is really useful. But all right, we are all caught up with questions here in the Discord and the YouTube chat. So appreciate you guys tuning in. I will see you all in about 30 minutes for our build review show. So until then, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.